Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft.
Welcome to the worlds of WordCraft. English 115F, Fall 2007, Vanderbilt University. Professor Jay Clayton, Professor Matthew Jed Hall. Visit our class blog at worldsofwordcraft.wordpress.com.
Ready to call it to order. Do you have any housekeeping or other issues we want to get up front?
Yes, really quickly, an opportunity for extra credit.
Extra credit. There we go.
There, right there. Right in studio invites you to this Thursday at 4 o'clock, this Thursday, in the Commons, so you know where that is. If you would like to attend that, you will get one extra credit point on your blog grade. Plus, you'll learn something that'll be useful to you. This is the writing studio. They're experts. We'll be talking about issues we've talked about, but they'll have a different approach from me. They'll have, you know, different insights. It'll be good training for you. So if you go afterwards, email me and tell me you've been on the honor code, and you'll get a one-point blog. Yes, sir. You had a question.
That was it. How do we verify it?
Yeah, just email it to me. Take it over.
We have a set of material here to cover for the next few weeks. Professor Clayton and I counted the classes. We only have about five classes left together for the semester. And we have a set of material and activities that could literally span into two semesters worth of work. So what I'd like to get started talking about in this discussion is, who had an opportunity to read the Halo 3 design article? Okay, everybody had a chance to take a look at it? Who'd like to give us a brief summary? Because I'm only going to spend 5 minutes on it, and I'll tell you the point I want to make with it. Who wants to give me the summary? Matt, you want to?
Sometimes what makes a great game is not that it's so revolutionary. It's that it was just all the kinks were worked out. As Halo 3, it had the same idea as Halo 1 and 2, but it was so good because they had so many hours of testing and so many different kinds of people testing it, and they worked so hard on revamping the game to make it a good experience.
That's good. That's good. What else about the Halo 3 discussion? Adding on Matt's points or disagreeing with Matt?
Well, I enjoyed the idea of 30 seconds of action that I have. And the, you know, and the simplicity of, you know, the rock, paper, scissors idea, and the, you know, how they take simple ideas and embellish them with amazing graphics and a cool storyline, and it makes an incredible game. And I think that's something that's important, is to simplicity.
Let's write in this sentence of highlight, Leslie. Why don't you read that out loud?
30 seconds of fun. The idea was to have Halo repeatedly immerse players in a hectic battle that would last for half a minute, just long enough to create heart-thumping chaos and the risk of death before offering a respite. Meanwhile, each level would also include scripted cinematic scenes that push the story forward.
It was an interesting set of ideas, of 30 seconds of fun, a rest, a story. But there was a story element to it. Peter, what did you want to add to this conversation?
To make a good game, you need an extremely highly funded research laboratory.
Is that what most authors also believe, to make a good narrative story? That's what C.S. Lewis and Tolkien had, right? To make Lord of the Rings and Narnia.
They had entire universes. I mean, come on.
But what's the difference between creating that book and then creating the game in this respect? I mean, Microsoft is taking this clinical approach with Bungie. The whole article centers around an industrial psychologist, right? And how people react to the various game design elements. So one thing I'd like you to walk away with from the article was, they take an incredibly process-centric engineering approach to designing fun with a guiding principle. So as we talk about design here, we're going to talk about what should our designing principle be? That's a discussion we need to have a little bit. What's that, our 30 seconds of fun idea within this? Because once you have a principle, any action that you take in the design process and the implementation process can be governed by that principle. Because a principle could be, do we carry the narrative forward at the expense of fun? Do we detract from the narrative and provide more of what we think is fun? So you need to think about these principles as we're walking forward. Anything else on the Halo 3 article that you want to comment on? Who's played Halo 3? Everybody except Jonathan and Daniel.
Oh, no, what about me?
I played online, not the narrative.
Oh, that's.
Oh, I haven't played the narrative.
but you played Halo 3 in the game, whether it's multiplayer on Xbox Live or the narrative element of it.
Oh, really?
So you've got a sense of what the game is as a first-person shooter, which varies dramatically. With Xbox Live. All right. Well, I appreciate that. A couple things we had asked you to do, and I know that many of you were unable to do it because I put in Oak the open office version of Mithrandale. Mithrandale is a persistent world in Neverwinter Nights 1. Actually, that's a map I want to get to, Chris. If you can plug yourself in on that map, I want to show what you're showing on that open document. If you get yourself plugged into the multiverse there. Process by which I came to some design principles and made some decisions, then we can see what's germane here. And then I'm going to show an important spatial representation. I always start with a map, right? To me, and I think this goes to Peter Chisnell's blog, which Professor Clayton and I would encourage you guys to read his entry this time around, we can get very minute in the pursuit of the narrative elements of the game as it relates to remediating Spencer. There is a world and a context which I have always felt drives the story a little bit better. Those people, Guillaume and Arthur and Brynemar, are actors on a much broader stage. And where I start is putting together the stage. And in terms of spatial orientation, the general climate, how the geography looks. So that what I have up here on the board is actually an example of the map world that was Mithrandale. Each of them have a grid coordinate, which I'm going to ask Chris Park to put up in a minute why that's relevant. But each of them have a grid coordinate, and that grid coordinate then is a design space in which we will walk, it will move over into Neverwinter Nights design tools, and we design the land in that area. So every one of those grid coordinates had a corresponding template, tile, whatever you want to call it, inside of Neverwinter Nights. So every one of those that I conceived here then had a coordinate over in the actual design tool in Neverwinter Nights. And then you, from that space, I knew the context, the geography, and the description of the area. So let me show you a little bit about how I started this. Let me zoom in here a wee bit more. Chris, can you pop up your map there at the top for me, please?
It's kind of my computer, but not his.
He may need to externalize the monitors, like function or whatever it is on yours should be.
Function F8.
Yeah, it's function F8. You need to hold them simultaneously. And then that should do it. Let's see if that pops over.
There you go.
There you go. Perfect. So pull up that and just lower it down a little bit. I had an XY grid coordinate system, and I'll show you what some of this means here. At the center of the world, I took that large map of Mithrandale that I showed you, and I had a background. I'm not going to subject you to the background. You can read that at your own time. But I had a general story that here's why the world is how it is. And it started at a place, I started with this one area, Cherub's Abbey, which was a city. It was a city from which all the adventures take place. Remember, the way that you'll see design elements is you have a home base, generally, in most of these games, in most persistent worlds. Home base is the place from which lower-level characters start. And then there's a ring of, outside of that home base, there's a ring of activities and creatures and things that you can actually tackle as a low-level character. And if you go beyond that level as a low-level character, what's going to happen?
You die.
You die. So there is a kind of an implied boundary that suddenly it goes from something a third level character can handle to something a 10th level character needs to handle. And that's where this area was, right around here, right? And it just keeps going out. This is why it seems semicircular. And I just wanted to show you that each one of these was representing a tile, a space in the design tool. Professor Clayton, can you move me over here for a moment? As we practiced earlier, there's going to be a lot of jumping around as we try to go through these tools.
Oops.
We're gonna be moving a lot of what I've got over here. Let me tell you what I'm doing is I've got the tools set on this laptop right here, and we're gonna talk through some of the concepts right here on this PC. Remember I showed you that Cherub's Abbey was the center. In our world, what I've done this weekend is I put together the base template. We are going to start off the game. Everybody who comes into Fairy Queen Online will start off in this classroom.
This classroom. Right,
this is the gateway. These doors over here that we've modeled, when you walk through those doors, that's going to be the entry into Fairyland. Okay, so that's the place. And matter of fact, and when you die, you're going to meet another character. Professor, you want to tell about who that character might be?
Yes. When you die, you're going to meet, you're going to resurrect in a study where Edmund Spenser himself, the poet, will be waiting for you in a book-lined study.
Which is hard to see.
And
here,
he is going to speak to you with lines from the Mutability Canto, which is one of the greatest bits of poetry that Spenser ever wrote. And it's, many people think it was the beginning of Book 7, the origin of what would have been Book 7 of the Fairy Queen. In the Mutability Canto, though, he's talking about death and rebirth. So you will be dying into, you know, in a way, the Garden of Adonis was a kind of prevision of what he talks about in very explicit terms in the Mutability Canto. So you will die into this chamber of mutability, of change, and then be reborn back into the world of Fairy Queen Online.
This is the space. All right, now I want to show you a little bit about the tool set right now. And so watch my cursor here. These are areas. So Fairyland 001. Although we don't have them up in simultaneously, if you remember, Cherub's Abbey had a grid coordinate, 001. It helps us maintain our spatial orientation. If you're designing land, what we may have to do is, if this is our starting point, this is our starting point here in the conference room, these doors transit to, I'm just going to do FL01 for lack of a better term. We're going to transit to an area that we're going to design Fairyland 001, which is a terrain element. So now we've got we're doing some spatial orientation. It doesn't matter north, south, east, or west there, because it's coming from a virtual space, the room, and into the real land of Fairyland. So with that said, we have to translate our map. We have to create a map of what we think Fairyland is. And we've taken a first step at that. Last week, Professor Clayton and I met and had a few chats, and we'll show you about what we came up with in terms of how we perceive the geography of Fairyland. We need to gather some consensus about one of our design decisions here amongst the group, where the space is. Now, we've got on the board here, you'll see a map of England. Yeah, there you go, Professor. Thank you. And can you switch me back? Before you switch back, let me just show you a couple things about the tool set. Areas here, this area tab is where you would create your areas. If you're interested in adding an area, you click on this tab here, right-click and add an area. This is the extent of your tutorial on an area. And then you can have no more than 3 up at any given time. And then this would be what a typical land area would look like. So this is some land and roads and things that we'll be able to populate the area with. You'll be able to elevate terrain, paint trees, put houses down, place objects in the area. So, but when you start, this is not as blank as the one that you're actually going to start with as a group. You can only have 3 of those at the same time. You're actually going to look, autosave helping me out again.
Why does it always do that? 5 minutes.
Trying to help us from, save us from ourselves.
I was going to say, this thing, it crashes.
It does crash.
Quiet.
Basically, interior areas that you start with will look about like that. And exterior areas will be fairly devoid of content. I happened to put some trees in this area because I was testing a tree generator. But this is how it starts, guys. a very basic area. Professor, if you can move us back over to the other screen. Now, to this tabletop laptop. Now, I'll come back to the mechanics of how to use the tool set a little bit later. What I wanted you to get a sense of was how we're going to take our ideas in terms of the spatial representation, do some design around the Fairy Queen space, and then start designing the actual physical areas that we'll have to create in the Neverwinter Nights toolkit. I think you need to flip me now. There you go. Thank you. Okay. So, what we've got. Perfect over there.
Oh, you wanted that over there?
What we've got here is, let me take you back. I've sort of started. Yeah, if you can get that back up, I want to show you the start of the module. Every module has sort of an introductory statement to it. I'll show you this in a few minutes. What I've done in Mithrandale is, this was my introduction. I wrote a story. And I said, okay, here's the context of Mithrandale. Here's the background. That story went into a module properties element that when someone were to look at the module itself, this would be the introduction they get before they move into the actual game space. I've taken a brief description of Edmund Spencer that was provided by Wikipedia and put it in the Fairy Queen Online module. But we also need to discuss what text we want in there. So there's two things I'd like us to come out today with, is an understanding of our spatial orientation, the areas we're going to attack in the map, and the world context. How would we describe the whole background of the world of Fairyland? What is the context? What sort of people and things are you going to see outside of the main characters in the storyline? Are there going to be villages? Are there going to be other things that we're going to populate the world with? And then we'll start dissecting the areas a little bit more. And then what I've done is, these are some screenshots you'll see from the Neverwinter Nights of First. Let's get past some of this here. Each one of these, and this is the big map that that Chris showed you earlier, we'll come up with something similar with this so we know how many, I'm going to call them tiles, how many tiles or areas we need to create. So we'll figure out, we're going to make 7, 6, 3, however many we think we could effectively do.
Wait, what do those numbers mean?
These numbers are...
just like a coordinate.
They're a coordinate system. Oh, okay. Exactly. So, and that's how many areas that were... there's probably this amount of geographical orientation. There's over 220 tiles or areas in this rendering of Mithrandale and Neverwinter Nights 1. Lot of work, guys, that went into this. And this is what it came out to be in Campaign Cartographer. So each one of these had an area. 1707, it's hard to see it, 1204, this was Cherub's Abbey. Each one of these had a corresponding, that hex had a corresponding map associated with it. So you can see the amount of work that went in to create that world. It's pretty, and once you, Chris has been in the tool set a lot. If you've been in the tool set, you can get a sense of the amount of work and labor that goes into that. So we will do something like this. Not to this extent at this point, because this will be additive over time. And these were some of the major areas that have an association with it.
The satisfied sausage.
Yeah, that is. The satisfied sausage is an inn.
What happens in this inn?
I have a hemp dealer in this, okay?
Nice.
Yeah. You can actually go... One of your quests is to go collect hemp plants. And make a quality rope. Then I just went down and described each one of those areas. Okay? You're only going to have to do 3 or 4 of these, so it's not going to be that painful, and what kind of pain I've endured, but this is a great joy as well.
How long did you think this took you?
It took me about 3 years to develop this. And I started with one simple tile and took it from there, and I started with that context. So this is a pretty substantial. These are quests and activities in that area alone. In Cheers Abbey, here are the things that you could do. Now again, this is a more... there's a lot of different approaches to this. I took a... I'm going to recap what I'm saying so we can move into a brief bit of discussion on our design ideas. I took a world with a general abstract background And then I descended down to one area and said, okay, at this place, Cherub's Abbey is going to be the wellspring for my adventures. And then I started developing around that and documenting what I was going to develop. So one last thing, and we'll get down. I just want you to go through and see the extent of this work. Actually, my next big project before I stopped development on this was I was actually going to create the Nine Planes of Hell.
Nice.
And we're going to do a little Dante work in there. So I'm saving that now for a later discussion, is that I want to be able to integrate some of that into this world. Had a crafting system in there as well. So all the things you're familiar with in Lord of the Rings, those are the things that if you made an apple pie, you've got a particular spell called the Aura of Glory. So there's a lot of things that you need to, and there's a lot of quests. And here's how I document. This is the one thing, as you do quests, I want you to think about the quests. They don't just happen. We actually have to develop them and code them. So when you think about the quest, what is the adventure that you're going to undertake? Any information you think the player needs to have about a quest? And more importantly, what are the goals of the quest? Remember Professor Clayton's discussion about the quest hero? What was one of the major elements running through the quest hero lecture? There's something that's formative to the quest. Anybody? Is there not an obstacle involved?
Got to be an obstacle.
Yeah.
Reward.
Is there not a reward?
Usually check.
Could be, but we're not going to do that in this case. It was a different kind of booty in this land. It was a magical item, gold. So think about the goal, what obstacle you need to overcome, and what the reward is. And that helps you care. That gives you a sense of what you've got to write. And I can tell you, let me give you one piece of advice. If you jump right to the editor and try to start playing and do what I call ready, fire, aim, it will take you three times as long to do your work. And if you spend a little bit more time up front thinking about what you're trying to achieve, making a few notes, you don't have to go to the extent that I'm using this as an example, a guideline, however you want to do it. I want you to enjoy this part of the course because I think this is an interesting opportunity for us. This helped me structure my thinking. There are many ways to approach writing a novel, writing a book, or creating a narrative venture in Neverwinter Nights. But think about what our broad space is going to look like, how we structure quests, document your quests if you have quest ideas. Even if we don't get to implement the quest ideas, we want to record them in SourceForge so that we can program them later. What questions do you have so far? I know these are things that should take me weeks to talk about, and I'm going to run through them very, very quickly. Did you have any questions about Mithrandale? I'll make sure the PDF file's out there for you to look at if you want to go back and reference it later for those of you who don't have open office. Yes?
We've definitely assigned characters for each of you all to create. We hope to ask each group to design quests. And so you need to be... I think this is an excellent model for the group together. So to think through, okay, this is going to be the quest. And as Professor Hall says, it doesn't have to be that formal. But those are the components. What the adventure is, note to players, and goal. So as a group, you ought to start, as you're designing your characters, you ought to be thinking about a quest or two that you'd like to see associated with your character. And jot down in some kind of form that we can then memorialize, because we may not be able to code every one of these quests. But if you'd like to see your quests get into the game 2 months from now, you need to give us some guidelines for it. So as a group, start thinking about that and keeping notes to yourself.
And I'll structure a document like this. No one here is going to have to do it. I'll structure a document like this. My goal with the project is that you're the genesis of what we feel is going to be a very long ongoing project. So we're going to start here, and we have to really set our expectations on what can we achieve in 3 weeks. And when you get into the tool set and start integrating some of this stuff, you're going to find that your reach will not quite get up with your grasp over time. It's a tough, detailed operation. hopefully you'll walk away with a renewed appreciation for what developers in MMO spaces have to go through. If you have things, submit it to me via email on the Quest, and I'll start integrating them into the document.
I got one more comment.
Yes, sir.
That, which is that every quest ought to contain an allusion, however slight, to an actual element in the Fairy Queen. That is, it could just be a phrase woven into the dialogue. Just some kind of allusion that if a person knows the text, they'll pick up. And if they don't know the text, they don't have to worry about it. But it could be as formal as actually quoting a line of the poetry, or as informal as just incorporating a single phrase from the poetry into the dialogue. So again, keep that in mind too.
All right, so we want to talk a little bit about our world, and that is the high-level primer, so to speak, on how I've performed a world design in the past that worked out pretty successfully. What we've done, Professor Clayton, you want to describe the map that we've kind of created up here and what our purpose was behind it?
This is a map of England and Wales that we traced from the CIA world map. So that's a
thank you, fairly, CIA, our government at
fairly
work.
Fairly accurate rendition of the existing boundaries of England and Wales.
Now, Professor Clayton and I were discussing Friday, maybe Thursday. We had a meeting over in Buttrick, and I'm going to draw your attention. This is a conversation we had. Was my work on my. We start from Wales, and then, Professor, you want to describe our angle of attack? I do not have your paper drawing version of this.
Right.
We moved from Wales as a left. That's my bad handwriting. And there was a joust with Castle Joyous in the center there.
Wow.
Right? That's where we said that you said there's one vector was coming up from the south.
One vector, Britomart's coming up from the south, emerging from Wales so that the actual encounter takes place out of Wales, more in central England, and emerges out of Wales from the south and meets Arthur and Gion coming down from the north of Wales. They're both emerging out of Wales into present-day England. And at least Gion and Arthur journey through a barren waste and then on an open plain, they encounter Britomart. And then, after that encounter, they go into a forest wide. And from the forest wide, three of them, really, if you think of Timaeus as part of their group, rushes off, basically, out of the story for our purposes, pursuing Flournoy and the Forester. And Britomart continues on to another spacious plain where Britomart sees the six knights attacking Red Cross, and then in front of the Castle Joyous. So we need to design an open plain, a forest wide, another almost a smaller plain or lawn in front of a castle and a castle. We need at least those four spaces in this game. This semester.
And this is an example. I'm not going to stick with this because it actually contradicts a little bit about what Professor Clayton just described. We have our map of England. So to the best of my ability with this product called Campaign Cartographer, this will be the world map that will be inside of our module. So I don't know who's played the campaign in Neverwinter Nights at all. Have any of you played the campaign? All right. For those of you who have, you maybe Chris, can you describe the world map once you open up a few of the...
Oh, well, you've kind of got, there's like, it's got a big map, and there's like little icons that kind of like project upwards almost, and you can see them, like you can click on to travel or whatever, and most of the time you make it safer, but sometimes you'll like get interrupted by bandits, but it's like a big map, there's like little elevated icons all over it that you can click on.
It'd be like hitting M, imagine hitting M on Lord of the Rings Online, you pull up your map. With the exception, as Chris described, there would be icons that you could click on and then do rapid travel to those spaces. We'll have whatever map we all agree on. It will look something similar to this. I took my best efforts to draw freehand with a mouse this kind of representation of whales in this area here. And that's just basically the general idea. So the map space, I put Castle Joyous there, I put Forest on the other side. We can populate this however we want. What I wanted us to do right now was have a conversation of, on this map up here, we can continue to duplicate this time and time again, is who wants to take a shot at leading a discussion and discussing where you think where Castle Joyous should be, where those planes should be. Kind of help us get some spatial orientation here so we get context, number one. And number two, I want you guys to have a conversation about, up amongst the large group, what is that world going to look like? What sort of things are going to people and populate it? There's not just going to be Britomart, Arthur, and Guillaume sitting there. There are going to be commoners. There are going to be other critters. Think about how you would express the game space to make it a little bit more interesting than five or six characters, and I'll sort out the mechanics of how we make that happen. So the first thing, Professor Clayton, if you want to lead him through the discussion, is where we situate ourselves on our large geographical elements.
I don't know that we need a discussion about that, because we want to just dictate where the best, where essentially we got, let's see here, how do I make this into a crayon? With that?
That should be.
Okay. So we want them coming down like that, and we want Arthur Britomart coming up like that.
So let me do one thing.
So
this is a B for Britomart, an A for Arthur.
That's right. And so that's where they encounter, and so that should obviously be a plane. But the rest is up for grabs. What we need a discussion about is, if, and here this map becomes too small, if one comes up like this and the other comes up down like that and meets at a plane right here, and this is your tile, which is a plane tile, where do you want the forest to be? Where do you want the Castle Joyous to be? But you can see where he's positioned them. Is that exactly what you like?
Mm. Well, Arthur goes across the west side, right?
Right. So Arthur travels through a wasteland this way.
Forest probably isn't going to be south of the wasteland.
So right there, Britomart comes up through undescribed terrain to this plane. So say is the plane, if this is the map and you're happy with it, where are they meeting?
Well, they don't meet at Castle Joyous.
No, they don't.
A different plane.
But don't be constrained by what I drew.
Right.
Don't
that's,
they travel
that's
a little
trashable.
Bit together before they, separate?
Say again, Jeff?
Don't they travel together for a little while before they separate again? If you're going to meet right below Castle Joyous and to the west of
the
forest.
Travel into a forest?
Yeah,
they all travel together into a forest.
Into a forest. So where do you want it? Do you want it east?
We agree they're meeting on a plane, right?
Right. There's our plane.
That's the first one.
Red is plane, yes.
I think since they're both already going east, and they meet each other going south and north, maybe they'll average their vectors and start going east. Or they'll hit a forest, and then maybe Florimel is running north. So Arthur and Guillaume continue north, and then Britomart continues east to the Castle Joyous.
That's funny, that's exactly what
so that's saying. A forest.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
a
forest.
Arthur
is
going south. Florimel's running south.
Okay.
I think there used to be mountainous territory, at least south of Britomart is, because to be, for a wasteland, how wasteland becomes wasteland is because, in the weather it gets trapped on mountains. So it would make sense to have mountains somewhere near there to, someone's thinking about how that really makes sense. That's what I add, to the diversity of the world.
So you're suggesting that she emerges through mountains?
Yeah. Or at least mountainous territory. It doesn't have to be a mountain range, per se.
Well, but we're brainstorming right now. This is if we draw it,
This is a tile that is wasteland. You may not have it, but that's wasteland. Okay, there's your forest. I heard some discussion, but I didn't understand.
On the actual map of England, it looks like there are slightly mountainous territories about where the A is, really about where the B is, and then near the top of that map.
We could make the coastline.
Well, that's an interesting point, is that we maybe need to use... Well, you see, it is our imaginary land.
It's fairyland, not even...
There. And the scholars have tried to identify real locations for the Fairy Queen, and they've been unable to. The best they could come up with is that maybe they could this would be their journey.
We don't need
to be constrained by mountains in northern Wales or something. You know, if we want to kind of use the England as our general template, that's appropriate because scholars think Spencer did. But the rest is our fairy tale.
I don't think we should focus so much on.
Like,
I don't think they should focus so much on like where they're coming from, but I think we need to focus on like the forest, and then
where the game's going to take place.
Right, and then cast doors.
Thank you. Okay, so we got our forest dead to the east of the plain, and then which direction does Arthur and Dan?
North is up. We have this cartography moment.
South. We've got. We've got them going in here, and south or southeast?
I mean, if you want to follow along the Arthur's path, south.
It says it goes south.
It's a follow.
Okay. So
they're going into a dense forest, though, right?
Right. Well,
should be towards the center of the island.
Goes that way. And where does Britomart go?
She continues east.
Still east? Not east north?
Maybe a little bit north, but I'd say middle east.
Other thoughts?
Yeah, but Castle Joyous could be sort of central to that home sticking out places.
I mean, if it's the climax of our game.
North what? The drawing. Wait, right there?
More east.
Right there.
Sure.
That is. And so this is sort of like that. Is that what people are saying?
Well, Tim and Greg, get in there. You guys had an observation to make on this. What do you think?
That's just northeast.
Northeast, yeah.
Like in that little bubble there.
Yeah. You need to come show me what you're talking about.
Nothing is exactly correct.
You're a casual.
Is that red?
Yeah. This bubble. In the center of that.
That's a long journey.
Well, I mean, the other thing I was thinking about is, like, what is our sense of scale at this point? Like, how big is one of these?
Yeah, like
and if Castle Joyous is the climax,
they can have area, right? Like, obviously, the interior of the castle is going to be, like, okay, probably going to be smaller than the outdoor, like, big journey in the barren waste.
I can say with certainty it'll be smaller.
Okay, good. Got some support on this one, but... Like, the interior of the castle might be, like, what, 8x8? And then the exterior where the planes are leading to everything might be 32x32. So, it's just...
And he's talking in game mechanic terms at that point. The grid size. Game tile terms.
Yeah. So, this is just... It represents an area, but not to scale.
Yeah. Well, just like in Lord of the Rings, how we're, like, traveling from Bree to...
A couple hundred miles an hour. Exactly.
But what I suggest that you do at this point is not worry about the scale so much, but get relative orientation is the most important thing.
So is this fine?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think the space between there and Joyous is where some of the questing can happen. Because that's the gray area. That's where we can have creative control is the journey. We could add a little bit of space.
That's true. That's all. You can always add more space. In three dimensions. So.
Okay, so this is our B right there. And the castle is right here, right?
just say that to the professor.
I don't know, just the
mission. I'm going to say that to this button.
This one.
Perfect.
Yeah, I think we can.
So.
Wait, does that mean, that's like, our geography.
Does that mean the rest of the map is just going to be like empty?
Yeah, how are you
for the time being.
For the time
being. We'll start off and we work with what we can get our hands around. And then over time, the next time we teach this class, once you got done, we'll add again and again.
Are you going to, like, fence off the outside area so that no one can... What are you going to do?
Venture off into nowhere?
Well, they under construction?
One of the things you'll have is something called a walk mesh. You can only walk in certain areas, so we'll be able to restrict that.
Like in the old forest.
Okay. Seth, our resident Spencer scholar, would you summarize verbally what we've just achieved here? Come on up, tell us, walk us through from your side so everybody can see it. Make sure that Seth is going to see that you all ratify our decision here as a group.
Essentially, Arthur and Dion are traveling southeast. They meet Bryn and Martin in a plane. Arthur's been traveling through a barren wasteland, which we could create. They meet the plane, and that's where the fight happens. Then they walk into a forest, and there for
point question, what are you talking about? The forest.
Right there, Flormel shows up, and Flormel runs out, and Arthur and Dion follow the Timmins, and Bryn and Martin decides to keep going northeast on the original path, and it was to Castle Joyous.
Okay. Every one of those. Go ahead, Daniel. You stay there, Seth.
Where are the players going to enter the story?
That's a great question.
Where are they? Yeah, the classroom.
They hit the question, guys, for the benefit of the people on the podcast. Where are the players going to enter the story?
I said
the class.
Got his hand up.
I said the plane with a jousting takes place, but without any jousting. Like maybe you have a commoner who will talk to you about how the joust went out.
Paul Peter, stop. Does anybody disagree with the summary that Seth just gave in terms of the relative spatial orientation of how the action unfolds with Arthur and Bryn and Mark moving out of Wales and into the game space?
Sounds great.
Without objection? So ordered. Now go to the question that Dan posed. Where's the game space start for the players? Peter, you were saying?
I think where the joust takes place, but like you come in after it has taken place and they've already left.
So there's also you're getting action in addition to entry in space.
What happened to the whole idea about the? I remember last class. I think we were talking about having Arthur and Dion fight a huge boar, or you were going to go save someone from a boar. Remember that idea? And then you were going to join up with Arthur and Dion.
What's guiding the discussion? I mean, personal opinion, desire. Is there a set of principles that we perhaps stepped over before we get into the action and the purpose of that event? What now? I'm going to ask you to back up a more conceptual level because we could spend a lot of time going through this, but we're really tight on time. Each of you will have a different conception of it. I think Daniel's point is very important to make here. What happened to that? Why is Peter suggesting something different? What guiding principles do you want to establish? Back to that Halo discussion we just had. What's the most important thing a player should come out of this with? You're designing a game, but for what purpose? Yeah, we got to do it for the seminar. Okay, good. We got to get a grade. But what do you want the players to experience? What's the purpose of the game?
The narrative of the Fairy Queen.
Ted, can't hear you. Mate.
The narrative of the Fairy Queen.
Is that the most? I mean, write that somewhere here. Hit a blank page. Insert. Just use your finger. Click on the insert blank page. Write purpose of the game on there. And then Ted's proposal is. Narrative of the Fairy Queen. And Fairy Queen is a poem with narrative in it, so. Because it could be exploring the poem line by line as a goal. Mm. We could recreate the entire Fairy Queen and have to interact with an NPC and Edmund Spencer region of the poem if that's what you wanted to achieve. I know Jeff's really excited about that prospect. Narrative of the Fairy Queen. What else, guys?
I guess the question is, are we trying to create an entertaining game or like an academic game? It's almost like a book. You can
want it mutually exclusive?
What about education?
There's different ways you can, like, it's like writing a book. You can either write an academic book that most people wouldn't read, or read to learn something.
I want to do something. So we got fun.
Kind of how this game
is. And learning, right? So you guys are all economists in here, right?
Yeah.
So that, are we going to trade off the work? Yeah. So you've got maximum fun, little learning.
Yeah.
Maximum learning, a little fun, and this is what you think the trade-offs are in terms of opportunity costs?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you actually all believe that? That yes. Lord, why can't we have...
No, I think there's a...
No.
It's cursed.
It's like this. Isn't this really what it's at? 10 units of fun and 10 units of learning.
Well, I mean,
is that the goal?
It depends on what graph you're looking at. Like, graph of English, like, then it would just be, like, the blue line. But if it was, like, video games, it's very possible that it could be that red dot.
Who are you designing this for? Who's the audience?
The people.
Look who Professor Clayton's pointing at.
And academic.
You're going to share with
the
average gamer.
I think the average
Wait. Am I the ideal audience?
No.
So think about teenagers. Somebody that loves Spencer and who loves gaming.
And so Seth, go back to that.
So do you want a game for people that don't care at all about Spencer?
We don't want people who know so much about Spencer they're going to rip us a new one every time we mess up a minor detail.
If we had had a gaming platform like this, we might have considered that.
That's true.
Sheldon's got an idea of Alice and Fantasy for his game design.
It's Malcasta.
It's Malcasta when she turns into the boss.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, why don't we design it like, since we've been playing LOTRO, why don't we design it like why they designed LOTRO? For like the Lord of the Rings people, like the purpose of LOTRO, we can make the purpose of our game. Obviously not using the Lord of the Rings online. Like, I think LOTRO was designed for people to like enjoy the Tolkien world and to kind of like play and have their own narrative in it. And we could have
previous.
I was thinking we could have something similar to that, where we do a little bit of the very main storyline, but still have our own like narrative within what we imagine to be the very clean world.
So Daniel, let me summarize that. You're saying that we can have our own set of storylines within the Spencerian context.
Yes.
And still have the cantos exposed over time as you encounter them. Is that...
Yes.
Do you want to add to that, Professor?
Well, I'd say since like what we're trying to do is get through as much of book three as we can. We've got like a main quest line at least in mind. So I think what we need to one of the purposes at least should be to express the major theme of book three and try and like illuminate the player on Spencer's innovative look at chastity, at least somewhat. We don't have to necessarily use his language, and it can still be fun, but like you can throw in things that will somehow
make it
to the player.
So write that as explore Spencer's theme. Is that right? Is that it? Chastity.
Anyone?
Explore Spencer's theme. As a goal. It says.
Chances to take these are shortcuts and have to resist the temptations in order to finish the quest. So just to take up later class and take this and
add to it. Yes. But you can do whatever you want now. We'll sort the other classes out later on.
So I was going to say, where I thought casting.
Speak up, I can't hear you.
The question was just to clarify that like later classes will take what we do and expand on it, so we don't want to, it changes my opinion of where everything should go.
This is the formative basis of the world. You guys have the privilege to kind of set it up.
We own these kids.
That's right. So, I mean, we have three things here we discuss. We need to explore the narrative of the Fairy Queen. Enjoy the fantasy world, and then explore the ideas of chastity that were presented to us in book three. Are these... Go ahead, Professor.
No one wants to just say, kill lots of NPCs, have violent...
Enjoy the fantasy world. That's implied violence.
So the violence is implied.
I agree.
Okay.
How else do you enjoy it unless you're killing stuff?
I'm sorry.
We have an interface that's accessible to a non-academic.
Are there other goals? I mean, these are fairly abstract goals. I mean, anything else we're trying to achieve? Sounds like there's a... Go ahead, Seth.
Kind of a sense of completion.
Help the old guys.
Yeah, is this a completion that he did something?
Okay, a sense of accomplishment is the purpose of the game, right? So what Seth's saying is, if someone comes into this space, does something like a series of quests, and they feel that they have accomplished something, that something has changed, that they've overcome the goal, overcome the obstacles, or they've learned something as a result. So they've achieved something by being here.
I don't know if this. Are we, when we do purpose of the game, are we trying to find like our version of the 30 seconds?
Yes,
of fun?
That's where I'm trying to get to.
Oh, because I don't know if these. I don't know what we should have as ours, but I don't know if these really fit that. Like, what's our like idea? Or that?
Well, Bungie had years and a lot of industrial psychologists to sort out how to condense all these ideas down to the 30 seconds of fun. You guys can have a think on what our 30 seconds of fun will be. I think these are things that help us get to those principles. Yeah. But as you are thinking about your quests, as you're thinking about the way in which you detail design your characters, one of the things I'm going to ask you to walk out of here is I'm going to show you how to quickly do a conversation with your NPCs. That's going to be one of the things you need to start thinking about. Through the conversation interaction with NPCs, through your interaction with the environment, you want to be able to have your players experience a narrative of the Fairy Queen. You want them to be able to enjoy a fantasy world of the Spencerian world. Explore these themes of chastity. So if you're going to explore the theme of chastity, it seems to me, as Professor Clayton said, you need to have a lot of allusions to things that were said inside of Spencer. And a sense of accomplishment. Those are, I think, supporting, but we just need to figure out how to distill it.
Yeah.
So I'm okay with this. This is at least gives you some guiding principles to keep in the back of your mind that so you don't go off and just haphazardly start throwing things together. This will give you some boundaries around, and that's all I'm trying to do is establish a set of boundaries. We've established two boundaries in this, I hope. Go back up to our map set. We've established some spatial boundaries. Right now, I have something that says to me, at minimum, I have 1, 2, 3, 4 exterior spaces that we need to build.
How many groups?
Well, let me hold on that thought before we do an implementation discussion. And now, in turn, so we've got some space. We know I'm going to be able to go correct this map up here, the campaign cartographer world map. That helps me orient where Castle Joyous are, plains, and forest. So this will be modified, the one I see on the main board here. That's the world map that will be that Chris described to us earlier. So we've got a couple of spatial boundaries, and we have some boundaries in principle. We'll go back to our text. That you should allow these statements to inform and guide whatever work you're doing as you even design an NPC alone. Keep this in mind, in the back of your mind. So let's go in and take it to one more step. Go back to the mainland there. Let's go in and have a look at the area surrounding Castle Joyous for a minute. Insert another page for me. Okay. Now, imagine this is a blank area. This is a step that we need to. North is up. Still, we're going to do another map. Don't worry about hex. Just leave that space will be our square. Where is Castle Joyous? You want to probably position Castle Joyous somewhere up to the north. Draw a square up left, right, middle. Where do you guys want it? Left, right, or middle?
As far as exterior world.
This is north. Let me just show you real quick. This is north. We're going to go in right now. And I'm trying to take you from 50,000 feet down to 15,000 feet. So now we're going to zoom in to this space right here. Right? Castle Joyous. The tile that contains the exterior of Castle Joyous. And I want you to start thinking about, now, this. If this is the tile, north is up, where is Castle Joyous? Is it here?
Top right
here.
Top right corner.
So draw a little castle, Seth, in the top right corner there.
A big castle.
I need little for the purposes of the tile design.
Decently sized.
Your castle is lovely.
Is that the mushroom castle?
It's the mushroom castle.
Oh, come on. That's a good castle.
Yeah,
that
was the second one. Yeah, that's the
development. That's our castle.
Oh, wait. Chris is jumping up into the Chris wants to draw a castle.
All right.
Well, Chris is artistically rendering our castle.
There we go.
All right. Guys, listen up here. Chris is doing a fantastic job, but it's not all that fascinating. What is around that castle?
A moat.
Yeah, if you draw a moat, we can't do a moat. Well, we can do a moat. We'll do a moat. If you want a moat around the castle, there's a moat. So draw a little moat so I know there's a moat on the castle.
What about like an outside encampment where the knights are?
Matt, here's Matt's idea. Tell again.
Like a small like outside encampment where the six knights are to fight them off, like right before you get to the castle.
Like a tent.
Like a tent, maybe two tents, knights farming out to meet you, or maybe two tents.
Like they're in the castle.
Okay, Matt, put your thing up there and see if they shoot it down.
Or six tents, so they're not.
Matt, do it.
So they're straight knights.
Each have their own actors.
It's our friendly
show up there. And then make some kind of annotation so I know what it is. It looks like a bunch of teepees from the Sioux Indians.
We're actually going to
have, Sioux Indians.
We can have Sioux Indians if we want to. Lakotas are there.
Camp
for Canigans.
I think that's a nice.
He doesn't know his money.
Just a little one.
Peter?
I feel like the camp sort of goes against Castle Joyous because everyone's supposed to be always, you know, like drinking and partying and kind of like. Having her six, they are her servants, but having them just kind of camp out sounds a little ridiculous. I think they should be on guard duty and come out when you get near the castle.
Yeah, they should always be chilling. They may, like, have a beer around the campfire or something.
Where do they deal with their hangovers?
Huh?
Where do they deal with their hangovers?
They just drink more.
Okay, they don't have hangovers.
They drink their hangovers away.
you just keep
they
drinking.
Make a good enough fortitude save. Well,
guys, you have a ferocious debate between Matt and Peter now. Let's have the ferocious debate, guys. Is there any Spencerian reference you could make for that assertion? This is where we're mediating.
What you mean, like?
Peter's asserting that the knights were inside the castle when they came out to meet Britomar.
No, they're already fighting. What's his face already?
Yeah, where would they have
first time
been?
You see the knights, they're already
in
the castle.
Would they be in the castle or?
Hey, I want you guys to hear something from this edge of the classroom.
The first time we meet the knights is they're already beating up Red Cross. Yeah, we don't get to see how that is initiated.
Which is why we need to
just have when you run up to a certain point, you see them fighting. You don't necessarily need the tents, and then Bernard has to come in and save. But.
No tents.
Well, what I'm saying is, what if we... I think the point of... Oh, I guess no one read my blog. But anyways, what I wrote about my blog is I think sort of the way Lord of the Rings does it is Strider is in the pony, the prancing pony. You don't follow Strider anywhere. He gives you quests, and I think since this is less about Fairyland, or I think Spencer's Fairyland is less about Fairyland and more about the characters than Lord of the Rings is, I think we need to have some sort of follow the characters aspect, but I think finding Red Cross and Britomar and then sort of like following them through their lifestyle is sort of railroading the characters. So if you could sort of have Joyous as it stands by itself, so when you come up, Red Cross isn't fighting the knights. Red Cross and Britomart, I would say the best place for them to be would be inside the castle. They've already done it. You can talk to people and learn what happened to them, but when you come up, it'll be you conquering what Red Cross and Britomart did as well, which is the knights will come out of wherever they are, fight you, or ask you, you know, to forsake your love and say that Malacasta is more beautiful, and of course you don't want to do that. I mean, later on they could make maybe two trees or whatever, but I think that's a little too high. Maybe they'll just come out and you'll have to say, no, I will not forsake my love. Sort of an allusion to chastity, I guess, and then you'll have to fight them to gain entrance to the castle.
Did we decide who we were going to have players play as?
Just a player in the world. The NPCs are all the characters in the book.
I kind of want to see the six knights fighting.
I think if we have them,
that can be your 30 seconds.
Well, this is where the story and the space start to intertwine. It's important to understand. Matt's asserting that there should be a camp for the knights. Peter's saying that the storyline, they should emerge from the castle and go through these narrative elements to express their theme of chastity.
Let's clarify even further. Peter is saying that you materialize inside the castle. You come out of this classroom and you materialize your character, Spud Monkey, or the Diesel, or whoever you are, comes out, materializes in the castle, and you explore the castle and you learn that Red Cross Knight has had a fight out there. And then you have quests that take you out of the castle to experience the world that they've experienced. I mean, that's a radically different design principle from what we've been discussing.
I think, actually, that they should begin in the jousting plane. And you can either, once you can, that's sort of the beginning, you can walk around, maybe, you know, kill some shrews or whatever. But once you get to the forest, you can maybe talk to a commoner or some people who will alert you to the fact that Guion and Arthur have gone south and Britomart has gone east. So these are two different places you can follow. Once you hit the castle, you'll have to fight the knights. Once you get inside, then you gain access to sort of the Malacasta and Britomart quests line. Or if you go south of the forest, you can find Chasing Florimel quest line.
So
that's pretty good.
Yeah. Because then you don't really mess with the story of having like this random person along with Britomart who apparently was never talked about in Spencer.
Yeah, so you're an aside. You're another knight, just kind of.
Who has an opposing viewpoint to Peter's? I see tacit assent, and we're running rapidly out of time here. This is one of the interesting things about design elements when you're going to market. Who has a differing perspective? Seth, do you?
I also have a question. Are we capable of having Britomart in multiple places?
Yes.
Without like being conflicting.
I can have 100 Britomarts everywhere, so.
That'd be awesome.
So are we going to have one person fight off all these knights that make... Are we going to have like a... I mean, I know that you can import your... Can't you import your characters from other, like, that you've already created?
Or make it new. Make it, I think he said make it local, right?
Idea. You could have our character go up and have the same six knights attack him that attacked Red Cross, and then you can... like have the option of just saying I like whatever to your lady, and then you go in the castle with them, and then you meet Britomart and Red Cross.
Good or bad?
So they could be back on duty.
I think it's kind of a good introduction. If you're walking up to the castle, and then Red Cross has hypothetically been—he's not fighting anymore for some reason. He's just not—you know—he's not capable of it. And then they say that our lady is better than yours. You kind of have before you even go into the castle. You have an idea of what's going to go on. It's like foreshadowing. As far as you started in the castle, it's kind of just like instant immersion, where this is kind of... That was my idea. Right.
Tim.
Or even, like, this is sort of a little different, I guess, but I'm not trying to contradict that, but you could also have maybe, since the lady says, like, why did you attack them, like, let them in, because he has the little thing for... She has the thing for Britomart, you could have the knights, like, back on duty, and they say, like, oh, well, we used to, like... have to get people to swear that Our Lady's the fairest, but, you know, we just had to... And then they could tell the story. You could get it from them. And then they could let you in as well. And just say, like, yeah, like, you're on your own. Go explore the castle.
But so you don't have to fight them?
You don't have to fight them. You could have it, like, afterwards so that they're no longer as strict as those in the present.
Fighting's the best part, though.
Yeah, where's the action? You want to fight them? 30 seconds.
They're in
I have no problem fighting at that point.
Some kind of sissy? Is that what's up?
Yeah. Yep, you tuned up for it.
Okay, guys, we got to get tuned in here. We have what I consider to be, Professor, help me out here, two primarily opposing viewpoints. If we go with a spatial orientation, we actually emerge from the English classroom, and where does the player start? On the plane. That's option A. I hear option B... as you may want to write option A and option B on a different blank page, Seth, so we can record this. Option B is that you emerge, the first story element, what you're saying here, is that you emerge from the English classroom here, open that door behind you, and you're immediately placed in the interior of Castle Joyous. Am I understanding this correctly? Peter, this is your...
No, I don't think
we have any...
Okay, so then I'm trying to...
I don't think we have a vote for inside the castle.
Okay, so we don't have a vote for inside the castle. That's good. Describe for me quickly, guys. We've got about 2 minutes. Option A and option B. I hear two opposing viewpoints, but they're very disparate. Summary, in a couple words, what you're trying to achieve, Greg?
I feel like the two options are either you get to the castle and Red Cross is already fighting the knights,
okay,
and they've got their own camp outside, or that has already happened. Red Cross is in the castle. You can talk to him once you're inside, but you have to deal with what he already dealt with.
So Red Cross fighting, Red Cross not.
That's what
my summary is, that it's there are a few different places in time, and what we're doing right now, it's one specific time, which is Britomart and Red Cross are in the castle, Arthur and Guion are somewhere down the forest. We don't progress through time, it's sort of a static time scale that you explore by yourself or with your friends.
I would just, you know, just get, help Seth out. Give him the options.
Yeah, static time scales. What's happened to happen, or you have 40% and you need to
protect each time. I would see the difference times as static time or following that the characters, following that piece.
So guys, help me out here, because I've got to actually go do this. When you leave the, what I need to know mechanically, when you leave the English classroom, where do you land?
Plane.
Anybody disagree with the plane? I'm hearing plane.
Plane.
Okay, so it's not Castle Joyous that we're actually going to land on. It's the plane. Okay.
So write the word plane.
So write start colon plane. I don't care where. Pilot error. Have Ted tell you about that later. Okay.
Okay.
Both should start.
Okay, so they both. Well, that's okay. Both start in the plane. So that gives me a place where we're going to enter into. We've got about 5 minutes. But planes, both start in the plane. So this is these are important.
Well, they're two different planes.
Two different planes.
They're two different planes.
Yeah, one's devoid.
Right. That's plane in front of castle. Plane in front of castle.
We need to get that clear for me. So.
No, aren't they both plane?
A is plane.
They're both adjusting.
They're both adjusting.
I think they're both adjusting.
The only difference is that in Peter's version, there's no fight going on with the Red Cross whenever you approach Castle Joyous. Whenever you approach Castle Joyous, the knights come out of Castle Joyous to meet you, and they give you the same challenge they gave Red Cross. Instead of you saving Red Cross, you experience the same thing Red Cross experienced, and it's not...
Yes, that's... Thank you.
Well summarized, Wesley. Good job.
But when you start on the plane, there's no through tomorrow.
So are the planes, and you're saying the plane directly in front of Castle Joyous is where we're
no,
going.
No.
We're both of the jousting planes.
Exact same progression.
And then I need to see that, jousting plane. That is a very particular design element that has to be translated into an exterior element.
Plane.
Jousting.
Just put in parentheses, jousting.
For both of them.
This is the kind of tedium that you have to go through to get to a design.
No, this is doesn't make sense to me. The jousting plane is not where the six knights come out.
No,
that's
no
exactly.
We're talking about something
start
completely
the game, go
later
back,
in this.
Go back to the
start
map.
The game in the jousting plane. Go through the forest.
After we've already experienced everything towards the end of our little section of the narrative, it's going to be, that was just like,
Peter,
when do the knights come in?
Professor Clayton, where you think it's going to start. And then we want to see his disagreement and consternation with us in the next 2.5 minutes.
All right. Here is the jousting plane.
That red one right there.
Erdemar and Guillaume have their little thing.
Wow.
Anyways, so if we were going to be following the characters, when you started there, maybe you would see the joust happen. Or you could follow the characters starting from the castle or whatever. What I'm saying is, if you start in the jousting plane, you then, if this is sort of a beginning area where you can walk around, you can experience Neverwinter Nights if you want to, you know, fight the little critters, whatever. You move into the forest, you'll find NPCs here who can either direct you to Castle Joyous or direct you south after Arthur and Guillaume and Florimel. And, I mean, however far we get. But what I'm saying is, this whole time, Red Cross and Britomart are always in the castle.
Already.
You experience Spencer's world as a separate character, sort of almost separate from their adventure, but you do meet them. If we were following the characters, you would sort of, you would watch the story happen as opposed to have the story happen
and
to
this
you
takes out
in
a
slightly different context.
And make like the wasteland and the mountains or whatever that is down there like a higher level area so that like they're automatically directed, like so you can only go.
So if you go down there, you get killed, right?
Yeah, well, so then you figure that out, and then you go another way.
And this way, it cuts out all the cutscenes that you said are really difficult to do.
You wouldn't have some cutscenes.
Okay, that's good. But this is where I'm working as a start. I'm going to create an area in there. The first area will be jousting plane. In our next class, we're going to discuss. I want you to think about this in your groups if you have a chance to talk for the next class. What elements are on the jousting plane? Think about one of the criteria design principles you mentioned.
This is it. Where is that?
The purpose of the game, narrative, and enjoy the fantasy world. What elements of Fairyland are in addition to the NPCs? What else are they going to encounter on the jousting plane? What does that plane look like? Is there a road on the plane? Are there wagons on the plane? Are there mules? What is out there? I don't know. That's what you're going to help. We have to help populate that plane. So next session, we're going to go in and we're going to actually draw the jousting plane, talk about map transitions,
And then we'll get it, I think at this point, the next class will actually be more prepared to have a discussion about entering conversations for the NPCs. Professor Clayton, you have anything else?
That sounds great. So we have decided on the static option.
Option A. Anyone in dire disagreement with that? You can encounter the Spencerian world at any given time as a static.
I think that's a good idea. It stays true to Lotro. Yeah.
So that's
exactly.
That works just so like you don't have a problem with chronological stuff going backwards to the zones. If you're going to go backwards in time, you go backwards with the you just get less interaction with the characters.
It also makes it interesting that you don't get to meet an actual character from the Fairy Queen for some time. So that you build an anticipation for how do I encounter Britomart or Gia.
You want to read a deal with meeting
inside the castle.
We'll have a lot more conversation. We're 20 seconds over class. Game design workshop, Friday afternoon, I'll be available. Let me know if you're going to come. If I get no one coming, then we'll have
a person. Wait,
Friday afternoon, here. Same place, same time. That's the time I have freed up. I mean, literally.
I have a quick assignment for everyone.
Yes, you guys
Professor Clayton, yes.
Quick assignment. Read Peter's blog entry, most recent blog entry. Everyone, read it.
YouTube.
And add a comment if you want to on it. Argue with him. Okay.
Yeah, Peter, you reread it.
Yeah,
I don't remember what you wrote. Maybe.
Put a comment to yourself.
Wait, when is this?
How do you move a group of
intros?